WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is going on, beautiful people? Hope you all had a beautiful weekend. Yes, it is Monday. Monday is like what we like to call it. And yeah, we're going to try to recap all of what happened. Again, keyword try here, folks. All of what happened in the sporting world that, yes, you care about in mid-Michigan. The Lions. How about the Lions topping the Packers? MSU giving it to Eastern and Michigan. I'm going to start right there with Michigan. Yeah, I think you all saw it. We're going to discuss it all again. Our phone lines will be open in just a sec. But hey, as custom here on the show, here are your current sports quick hit headliners to start your week.
I'm Jack DeWitt, and this is Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for Monday, September 22nd. Michigan State poured on 73 points against Eastern Michigan in a lopsided win on Saturday, defeating the Eagles 73-14. Delton Williams had three rushing touchdowns and 103 yards to lead the Spartans. Michigan State will play Wyoming in their homecoming game on Saturday at 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Michigan, on the other hand, dropped their home matchup to Utah 26-10 in a game that saw a lengthy weather delay. Michigan is now 2-2 on the season, and head coach Brady Hoke's coaching record is just 17-13 following his first season at Michigan, where the Wolverines went 11-2, including a BCS Bowl win over Virginia Tech in the Sugar Bowl. Another good note for the Big Ten, Wisconsin breaks the Big Ten rushing record with 644 yards, including 253 and 5 touchdowns from Melvin Gordon. Tigers took 2 out of 3 from Kansas City this weekend. They remained 1.5 games above the Royals in the AL Central. The Detroit Lions defeated the Green Bay Packers 19-7 while holding Green Bay to just 223 yards in a game that saw quarterback Matthew Stafford pass for 238. Currently atop of the NFC North, the Lions look to move to 3-1 when they take on the New York Jets on Sunday. Former Michigan State quarterback Drew Stanton is now 2-0 as the Cardinals' starting quarterback. They are a perfect 3-0 on the season. This past Sunday, Drew Stanton passed for 2 touchdowns in the third quarter to lead the Cardinals to victory. The Redskins-Eagles game on Sunday featured two former Michigan State quarterbacks. Nick Foles, who eventually transferred to Arizona, got the best of Kirk Cousins as the Eagles downed the Redskins 37-34. Men's soccer is up to number 16 in the country. They defeated Maryland 1-0 on Friday in their first Big Ten game of the season. They look to take on Bowling Green on Wednesday, while the women's team also tied Maryland 0-0 on Saturday. And those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Let's send it back to Al Martin.
Jack, my man, thanks a lot for bringing the current sports quick hit headliner for this Monday, September 22nd. Again, folks, if you want to call in and give your thoughts on any of the weekend action that took place, if you got some thoughts on the Lions topping the Packers in yesterday's game or Michigan State handing down a good old-fashioned butt whooping to Eastern Michigan on Saturday, if you got any thoughts on that, or if you want to talk about Michigan and the state of their program after falling to Utah on Saturday, pick up that phone, yes, and dial that number, 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at AlMartinWKR. And also you can tweet us at our other Twitter page for Current Sports, our new and improved Twitter page just for the show. Follow us at WKAR_sports. Again, that's WKAR_sports to follow anything, the latest action and news concerning all things MSU sports to Lions, Tigers, anything. I mean, it's a fantastic page, so follow us there to get news on anything that's happening pertinent to the show. So follow us there as well. Well, we have a great show in store for you in just a moment during our second segment of the show. You will get to hear from one of the, most highly touted, probably the highly touted basketball recruit from here in mid-Michigan, at least. He's ranked nationally on ESPN's poll. He's a fantastic young man, Trevor Manuel Jr. Yes, Trevor Manuel. I mean, he's unbelievable, folks. Trevor Manuel, he actually played ball for Lansing Sexton, then transferred to Oak Hill Basketball Academy for one season, then decided to return to mid-Michigan to play for Lansing Everett. So he'll be playing for Lansing Everett next year. He's been playing with his two cousins. And there was a lot of speculation whether or not Trevor would return to Sexton due to Carlton Valentine coming back after taking a year off from high school coaching. But he's back at Sexton. And, of course, Carlton Valentine used to coach Trevor when he was a freshman over at Lansing Sexton. But, you know, Trevor decided to move to Eastern, or Everett, excuse me. And at that same time that he made that decision, he also made one other life-changing decision, and that was to take his basketball talents to Oregon University after he is done with his senior year. So you'll get to hear from Trevor Manuel on just why he made this decision, what he learned while being out at the famous Oak Hill Basketball Academy, and so much more. You do not want to miss that interview. But in the meantime, folks, we have a ton to talk about. Again, that number to call in is 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We'll take your calls on any of the weekend action. Alex Shark, how you doing, my brother?
Oh, pretty well, man. No more fantasy complaining this week. But
no, I'm happy. Good. I am happy about every single one of my fantasy teams won this weekend. I was very, very close to winning my pick and pull. I was only two games off on that one. But I'm happy. Yeah, as far as fantasy goes, I'm happy. What about your team and how's your squad looking?
Hey, I'm undefeated, man. First place, doing well. But
you only have one league?
One league.
Really?
Gotta go with
you're not like me where I have like 20 leagues.
It's cheap.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's true. Is it a money league too?
Yeah, money league.
Good
I'm
stuff,
doing good
man.
So far. Don't jinx me. But
all right.
Sad about Tulloch, though. We'll talk more.
Yeah,
today.
we're gonna dive into that actually right now. And also, not only does Alex join me on the show, but you know, throughout this entire semester, we have a group of great students who are working with us. You know, just trying to, you know, finding their niche in the broadcast world or just the sports reporting world in general. They're doing an outstanding job. They got beats. They're going out to high schools and doing some great stories. And we have two of them in the studio with me and will be joining us for the first segment of the show. Jock and Tyler, how you guys doing, man?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Al?
Very, very well. Jock, great stuff. When this is your first time doing the headliners, thanks for bringing that this afternoon for us. And Tyler, you were actually on the show last week. And you did pretty good, man. You held it down.
Thanks, man. I tried my best.
Yeah. It wasn't hard. It wasn't hard for you, Tyler. You're a natural, my brother. All right, guys. Well, first, I guess first topic is the Detroit Lions. As you just talked about, Alex, the Detroit Lions topping the Green Bay Packers. A pretty big game for them yesterday afternoon. It's 19-7 was the final in that one. I tell you what, the Lions, they held Green Bay to 223 yards. Lions quarterback Matthew Stafford passed for 238. Currently atop the NFC North right now. Pretty impressive outing. There are a few areas we definitely have to harp on really quickly. And first, I'll start with the good with this one, guys. I'll start off the conversation by bringing up the defensive line. I thought the defensive line for the Tigers was, I mean, for the Lions, excuse me. I got Tigers, Lions, golf going through my head right now. But the defensive line for the Lions was outstanding on Sunday. Outstanding outing. If you look at it, they held the Packers to just 76 rushing yards. The opening drive for the Packers, it was an opening scoop and score from safety Dan Corey. I mean, unbelievable. And then how about DeAndre Levy? He has been a man. DeAndre Levy has been spectacular. He had 10 tackles, two pass breakups for him as well. Defensive line, they were beautiful. Reggie Bush on the offense for the Lions, I thought he played out of his mind. He had 99 yards, 61 coming from on the ground, 38 through the air. And, you know, just looking at those two aspects, though, those two aspects for me really shine really, really bright in that game. And you got to be encouraged if you're a Lions fan looking at just those two aspects to start off, guys.
Well, I mean, I think that the defensive line ranks, I guess, number one in the league. And you saw Nick Fairley force a fumble that Don Carey picked up, ran for a touchdown that was the Lions' first touchdown on Sunday. And then Ndamukong Suh had a sack. And, I mean, they've held every team under 100 yards on the ground, which is kind of the staple for, you know, offenses to look for 100 yards on the ground. So they've done a great job all year.
Yeah, definitely. What about you, Tyler?
I think the thing that stands out to me most during that game is you watch Aaron Rodgers had how many yards through the air? 165, is that what it was? Less than 200, significantly less. And who do the Lions have in the secondary?
Exactly. And that's another thing I want to harp on, too. Isn't it amazing that, you know, especially last week, and even before the season, I was big on the Lions improving that secondary. For me, one of the glaring Achilles heels for this team last year was that secondary. They got beat quite too often, and the Lions in the draft didn't do anything to address it at all. And I'm sitting there looking at this catastrophe, especially looking at last week with the injuries, and I just couldn't believe that this Lions secondary was able to hold down the fort as well as they did against one of the NFL's best in Aaron Rodgers. It was an impressive, gritty performance by the Lions secondary. Alex?
I guess injuries in football are somewhat of a, I don't know. I guess they're somewhat common, but the saddest part for me was seeing all the injuries from Don Carey to Tolek. And then now, I mean, as well as the defense played, can you expect that every game? And that's the lingering question I have after their win. But nonetheless, yeah, great win. They held down a great quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. But I'm just wondering if that defense can hold up from here on out.
For me, it's not about the defense for me, Alex. For me, it's about the offense, to be honest with you. Throughout these past two games, the offense have scored only two touchdowns. Just two. I can't believe that. You know, when you look at all of the weapons that Matthew Stafford has on this squad, from Reggie Bush to Golden Tate to Calvin Johnson to Joseph Fourier, and the tight end trio of Joseph Fourier, Brandon Pettigrew, and Eric Ebron. I mean, there's so many toys for him to play with on this offense, but you only have two touchdowns throughout the past, you know, two games? I mean, I can't believe that was a glaring stat to me looking at yesterday's game. And they were, if you look at the defense outscored the offense in yesterday's game. So for me, the offensive efficiency for the Lions still is a question mark for me, because next week, you know, you play the Jets. This upcoming weekend, you play the New York Jets, a defense that is certainly much better than the Packers. How are you going to score? I just don't know. And then sometimes I bring up Matthew Stafford. You know, I brought up this last year as well with Matt, and I said it before this upcoming game against the Packers, Alex. Matthew Stafford and his turnovers, that's got to stop at some point. The Lions cannot go, I think they'll make the playoffs, but they can't go far in the playoffs if Matthew Stafford is turning the ball over like he did, especially in this past game. I understand he has Calvin Johnson, the best wide receiver in the game, but I think he gets too fat and happy at times, forcing the ball down the field. I think he has to learn how to take an L sometimes and just throw the ball out of bounds, because you saw in that one interception, he tries to go to Megatron. Now, granted, Megatron, I mean, he's shown that he can make catches like that. Megatron is a freak. He can make catches when he's double covered, sometimes triple covered. But you got to put the ball, if you're going to throw it down, and you got to put the ball in a position for Megatron to make that play. He overthrew it, interception. We saw the week before that, he underthrew one, interception. That's got to happen. These turnovers have to stop for the Lions to be successful week to week to week.
Okay, Al, I want to start off by saying that Stafford did a great job in game one of going through his progressions, making his reads, and then throwing the ball away if there was nothing there. And the problem is that when you are triple covered, no matter how good of a receiver you are, you know, those guys in the NFL, I mean, most of them are at least all-conference or all-American in college. They're going to find a way to take the ball away from you. And if you turn the ball over, you're not going to win football games. So I think Stafford needs to do a better job in the next few games of just not taking so many chances downfield and throwing to the check down receiver. As you saw, Bush had 38 receiving yards out of the backfield yesterday, and that's something they need to continue to do.
I thought that was great. He was almost like a hybrid player. You can give him the ball in the backfield and let him do work on his feet, or you can put him out in the flat route and let him get some yards and possibly a first down. He was great yesterday in that. Yeah, I agree. I agree with you, Jack.
See, I think Jim Caldwell was a good hire for the Lions, because Jim Caldwell is an offensive guy. And I think what Stafford needs is he completely needs to cut down those turnovers. And I think when he gets time with Caldwell and Joe Lombardi, who we've heard reviews about, I think that eventually he will learn some discipline and he will learn to cut down on that. I think he's trying to be Brett Favre too much and be that riverboat gambler and throw those jump balls. But I got to say, with your point about the offense did enough for them on Sunday. And for me, I'm a defense wins championships guy. I'm an old school guy. So to watch that defense not break and to make plays when they needed to, even when they lost, you know, Tulloch, I think that's huge for the Lions. Holding the Packers to only 7 points,
it's
that's
big.
Huge.
It's and looking at the defensive line, the defensive line is the best defensive line in the NFL right now. I think that's safe to say. Looking at the stats right now, the Lions, according to NFL.com, Alex, have the top defense in the league. Isn't that that's insane in the membrane, my man?
That's astounding.
Woo!
But that's the thing, Al, is look with the team coming into the year, what's weaker, offense or defense?
So you're still saying...
Well, coming into the year, what's weaker? Obviously the defense.
But right. the defense is showing they can hold down the fourth.
For now. But now with Carey out, you had Bentley out, now you have
Tolik
out. Yeah. I mean, sure, Levy's great, and he got great praise from, what's his name, King from Sports Illustrated. He gave him great praise as one of his best players of the week. But regardless, I mean, Levy's going to move, but you lost some really key pieces. And as much as they are the best in the league so far, to keep that up with one of their weakest parts of the team, that for me is the biggest issue.
No, I see where you're going right there because, hey, we could be singing a different song against the Jets next week if these injuries provide more glaring than they perceive to be just on paper here. Just looking at what the Lions were able to do, though. That defensive line and the secondary, you know, with second string and third string guys to come in to hold it down the way they did, it was pretty impressive to say the least here.
Yep.
So for me, as far as the need goes for the Lions, I'm just waiting for this offense, I guess, to break out. I'm waiting for that one game to, you know, where Matthew Stafford just goes insane, Reggie Bush just I'm waiting for that potential, you know, to live up to the hype that this Lions team had before the season began. We haven't seen it yet, guys. I just haven't seen it yet. Maybe in game one. Game one, they look great. You talked about that, Jack. But I'm waiting for them to have that breakout sort of performance to show that, okay, this is the offense that we've been waiting on. I just haven't seen that yet. As far as the defense goes, the defense have given me no doubt, no point of doubt for me to harp on, to say, to question them, I guess you could say. Looking at, I always say that the proof is in the pudding right now, and the defense is showing up. I can't say anything negative about them. But as far as moving forward and what could be a question mark or a need for this team, you're going with the defense then, Alex, huh? You're sticking with the defense. What do you guys see? As far as question marks for this team, what are you guys concerned more of, the offense or the defense? Jack?
The biggest question mark for the Lions is obviously at right tackle. We've had, you know, we started with Adrian Waddle. He's going to be out a week or two more weeks at the most. And then Corey Hilliard came in, played great that first game, ended up having a season-ending injury. And since then, they've had Garrett Reynolds and Cornelius Lucas try to fill that void, and that didn't help because they haven't been able to generate much on the ground all year. But I think if they can solidify that right tackle, whether it be Lucas or Reynolds, that'll help a lot in getting the run game going. And if you get the run game going, that'll open up the pass game, especially the play action. We can throw a deep ball to Johnson or Tate.
I agree. And you saw both teams to start the game, the Packers and the Lions, with Eddie Lacy and of course, Reggie Bush. I mean, it was clear that both of these teams were going to try to find their run game before they started heaving it down the field. So I agree. Once the Lions' run game gets going coherently, you saw it with Bush. You didn't see much of Joik Bell. I had Joik on my fantasy team, which was a totally wrong decision. But, hey, I still won, so I guess it doesn't matter. But still, Reggie Bush had a great game, and I look forward to seeing the Lions really break out that run game week to week to week. I agree, Jack. What about you, Tyler?
I like that pick, Jack. Nobody pays attention to the trenches that much. I like that. Props.
That was nice, wasn't it?
I got to say the secondary. I mean, they played really well.
Mm-hmm.
Really well this past week. But I think that in the NFL, there's such a quick turnaround, and coaches are so smart, and they will pick that apart, that there's been so many injuries there and they've been decimated. I'm curious to see how the secondary will continue to improve, if they will, going forward.
Certainly, folks. If you want to weigh in on our conversation, 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Shifting gears now, we got to bring up MSU football, right? MSU football had a huge stomping win over Eastern Michigan on Saturday. 73-14, the final of that one. Delton Williams had three rushing touchdowns, 103 yards to lead the Spartans. Michigan State will now play Wyoming for homecoming this upcoming weekend. But hey, okay, let's be honest here. We all kind of expected this, didn't we? I mean, for me, looking at this game, it wasn't if Michigan State would win, it was how Michigan State would win for me. For me, I was really looking at the little things in this game. But you also have to take that with a grain of salt because Eastern Michigan, I'm real, guys. Eastern Michigan is bad. They're really, 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 really bad right now. That program is kind of just hanging on by a thread right now. They weren't able to really generate any offense in the first half. Really looking at the two touchdowns they did get, I mean, they were really just kind of blown defensive assignments from Michigan State. Something, again, if you look at the little things, that's something that could be a glaring problem moving forward against bigger opponents. Pat Narduzzi kind of alluded to it in his postgame presser after that game. The guys have to make sure that communication is at its utmost importance in each and every game. And looking at how they gave up those two touchdowns, again, they were just blowing defensive assignments at the end of the day. Again, they're going against EMU. I was not really shocked. By the blowout, I was shocked at, I guess, how many points Michigan State was able to put together. I mean, 73 points, my goodness. I predicted, well, Alex, you went higher than me. You said 50-something.
Yeah, I said 56-7, and at halftime, yeah, or right at the beginning of the third, that was the score.
Exactly, exactly. And I said I went around like 45-10, I think, something like that. But 73, my goodness. They clicked on all cylinders. But now, I mean, moving forward, I mean, it just shows that this MSU team was certainly chomping at the bit after the loss to Oregon to get back on the field. They certainly took out a lot of frustration of waiting 2 weeks against Eastern Michigan University. I really have nothing to harp on with this team. It's just, as far as for me, you know, when we were in a post-game presser, Alex, one of the things that you can take away from a game like this, first of all, I want to bring up an article, too, that Graham Couch of the Lansing State Journal wrote this morning. Graham Couch talked about how scheduling in college football really needs to be revamped, especially when you talk about non-conference matchups. For me, I mean, what does a win against Eastern Michigan, a blowout win against Eastern Michigan, really do for a team, either team, to be honest with you? What does that really do? Because for me, from a fan perspective, why in the world would I want to see a 73-14 win over an Eastern Michigan team? A
couple of reasons, Al.
I don't like it.
There are a couple of reasons for that. One, obviously, it will help their BCF playoff chances right about now.
And that's something I'm going to hit on.
Number two, you get to see all these second string, third string players who you don't get to see tested at all in a game. That was the first game that Michigan State fans got to see Damian Terry actually do something in.
Who wants to see that?
And I'm not just saying come in for a snap or two.
Alex, but who wants to see that?
People want to see if Michigan State can be successful after this year and if they have the depth to make it past this year.
But not in the middle of a season, though.
It's not the middle of the season. It's the third game.
It's week three. I don't want to see the backup. Week four. That's even worse. I don't want to see the backup fourth string QB in. I want to see some competitive college football here. For me, as a fan, it's a big turnoff. It is a huge turnoff when I have to watch a non-conference matchup blowout that you know Michigan State is going to stomp on them. For me, you could have done this at the beginning of the year. You know what I mean? I just feel as though there's too many non-conference football games. I think it would bode well for college football in general to have more conference games to look at. And from a fan perspective, that's what I want to see. I was bored. I can honestly say I was bored covering that game on Saturday.
Yeah, I think Jacksonville State would have been enough. Like, they didn't need Jacksonville and Eastern. I can see that. But still, I mean, with Jacksonville, they didn't get to see Damian Terry play like 10 snaps, 20 snaps in the game. You didn't get to see. They played almost every player on the roster.
They could have thrown him in. I tell you what, they could have thrown him in. I tell you that.
But now you have the playoff rule, so you can't do that.
But really, when you watched the game, did you not yawn a little bit on Saturday, Alex?
I loved every minute of it, honestly.
Oh, my goodness.
I love seeing all the depth of the team.
Oh, Jack and Tyler.
All right, so what I got to say about this, first of all, is this is part of a series of, you know, playing the directional schools in Michigan, which was brought about to help the economy, and it draws interest because they're local games. I really don't think when this game was scheduled however many years ago, they thought it was going to be a 73-14 game. Mm-hmm. I really don't. And I remember when I was in high school at Kalamazoo Central, and Western Michigan hosted Virginia Tech, back when Virginia Tech was a very good squad. I mean, they're still decent now, but they're not as good as they used to be. And everyone was so excited to play Virginia Tech. I mean, you know, probably most of them knew what the result was going to be. Mm-hmm. But they were excited for the opportunity to play a top squad.
Right, right. Okay. So you're going from basically the perspective of an EMU fan base, you know, kind of getting, you know, it's good for them because they get to play a Michigan State type team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big believer in the statement that great moments are born from great opportunities.
Mm-hmm. I dig that. I guess we wouldn't have the Appalachian State upset over Michigan if that opportunity wasn't given, right? Okay, I can see the quasi type. I still don't agree with it, but I see where you're going, Tyler. All right, Jack.
Well, I thought Alex touched on a good point when he talked about getting to see the second and third stringers. It's always good to get those guys game experience because, you know, no matter what you do in practice, no matter what schemes you run, or if you're on the scout team or whatever, that game experience, there's no replacement for it.
But do you guys feel it all? Don't you? Because I kind of get the feeling that I just feel as though there are way too many non-conference games
well, yeah, and,
in
you
a
know,
college football season.
There's 14 teams in the Big Ten now, so you could realistically, I mean, you could have 10 conference games and still not play three of those teams. And that'd leave you two non-conference games before postseason. So,
exactly.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that, you know, we could do more conference games and I would not be opposed
to it. I think one or two is enough. That's all I want to see. Other than that, I want to see, you know, these Big Ten teams take each other heads off to separate the good from the great. You know, I don't want to see an Eastern Michigan-Michigan State game. I don't know. Tyler?
Well, I kind of like that they do play the in-state directional schools, but I kind of agree where, you know, maybe one is enough. So what if they played, you know, they had Oregon and they have Eastern, but then what if they played, like, an LSU or an Ole Miss or another, like, Power 5 conference school?
Okay, that would bode well for my eyes, I tell you that, than seeing an EMU team. I tell you that. I like competitiveness.
How can you judge Michigan State on a national scale if there's only one out-of-conference game? I could see what you're saying, where four might be a little bit too much. I can go with two or three. Mm-hmm. But if you're just playing one or two games against Jacksonville State and Oregon, how in the world can you judge MSU on a national level?
I think that's a great sample size for an out-of-conference game. Because, one, you play a good warm-up game against whichever – I mean, every team, I feel, is doing college football, especially in the Big Ten scheduling. They schedule these lollipop games to start the season. So you schedule a game where you can probably get – you know, you can see a Damian Terry play. And then you play another out-of-conference game where you play one of the big dogs. You play in Oregon. I think those two are a very good non-conference schedule and a very good sample size for you to judge MSU upon before conference play starts. Because after that, I mean, I just don't see how EMU, I mean, what can you gain out of this game other than looking good on paper, other than padding perspective, as I like to call it. This looks great on paper. At the end of the day, when the committee sits down and looks at, okay, who's going to be in this 14 playoff, and they see 73-14 on Michigan State schedule against EMU, it's going to look real good. That's going to look great, right? Matter of fact. But other than that, that's all it does. That is it. Period.
Well, I could see the warm up game and then a big dog and maybe like a middle tier team just to get a good balance.
Three is too much.
Maybe two big dogs.
But I would like to see 10 conference games a year.
Yeah, well, and someone brought this up to me recently. The other reason why I think four is a little bit too much, and why I agree with you that the non-conference games go too far. When was the last time you saw homecoming against a non-Big Ten team? I mean, the point is it to kick off the Big Ten season is what I anticipate homecoming to be.
This is going
to
be another boring game.
I don't think fans are coming far and wide for homecoming to see Wyoming. Who in the world is going to come and like, oh, I'm going to come just to see Wyoming?
Thank you. I 125.26% agree with you on that. And again, this is going to be another blow. I mean, I think I'm looking at the line here. MSU is favored by 32 in that game. I mean, these are just ho-hum games. I don't know, guys. Really quickly, with 3 minutes left, we have to bring up Michigan, of course. Michigan, man, they are... Woo! Man, if Apache is listening right now, I gotta send out I feel for you, Apache, right now. Michigan, they dropped their home matchup to Utah 26-10 in a game that really saw a huge weather delay. It was really coming down and raining. They actually had to evacuate the big house. I know the band actually took shelter, and a few fans actually, a lot of the fan base took shelter at the Chrysler Arena. They brought fans back in. Really, no one was at the game at that point. Michigan ends up losing to Utah again, 26-10, the final of that one. I tell you what, guys, I think as far as, you know, I like to bring up panic meters on this show, Alex. I would have to say the panic meter is at a 10 for Michigan right now. Would you agree?
I think that if Michigan loses one Big Ten game, just one, that's all it takes, I think that he's done.
Do you think Brady Hoke's done right now, though?
Not right now. I think you have
really?
To wait. I think you have to wait till the Big Ten season.
Wow, that is shocking. I would have to put a fork in it, and I think it's done right now. Tyler?
I'm going to have to disagree with you here, Al, that Brady Hoke is done, because I think that Dave Brandon, the AD's job, is tied to Brady Hoke. And I don't mean that in if Brady Hoke loses, he will continue to lose, because, I mean, yes, that's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But Hoke was the first big hire that Brandon had. So if Brandon fires him, then Brandon's essentially admitting, I failed at the first big coaching decision I had to make. And that's almost him saying, like,
but
I
really,
failed
how
at my
short,
job.
But really, how short do you think that leash is for Dave Brandon? I mean, I think Dave Brandon, as far as overall athletics at U of M, I mean, I understand that was, his first big hire. But overall, I think U of M athletics, other than football, has done relatively decent across the board. So I don't think if Hoke is fired right now, I think Brandon still keeps his job.
Well, I know a lot of people are upset about Brandon and some of the changes that he's made. And, I mean, you saw how they struggled to sell student tickets and tickets in general to games this year.
Definitely. They
and
did.
He brings in money for the department. He
and
does.
I don't like the new policy they've enacted for the student section, but that's a whole other discussion. But, yeah, I can see that area. Jack, what do you think?
Well, I mean, take a look at what he did in his first year. He went 11-2. And then since then, he's been 17-13. He's got to go.
Got to go. I think that was the last. I mean, as Michigan, let me just put this in perspective. Michigan football every year is expected to compete for a national championship. They haven't done that in quite some time. I can't remember the last time they've done that. You don't lose a game to Utah at Michigan and keep your job. I just don't see it. I think Brady Hoke has kind of exhausted his time here. He was on the hot seat to end last year. And now that you lose to Utah, and look at another thing that really stood out to me was the stands. I don't know if you guys looked at the stands or glanced at them throughout that game. But there was nobody there. I have never seen, in all of my years of watching U of M football, I have never seen the stands not packed at the Big House. It's panic mode right now. We have a caller right now on line one. I knew he was calling. Apachu, how you doing, my man? Welcome to Current Sports.
Thank you for your pity, man, but I'm not crying.
You're not crying. How are you? Looking at that game, do you think Brady Hoke's done, Apachu?
Well, he might be done, but I'm not saying he's worthy of being done, okay? What I felt the last couple of years was Michigan's lagging a running back, and I think they got a running back now. And not only that, I think they got a defense. These cats are young, but they're very athletic, as was demonstrated. They got beat on special teams, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm a fan, not a coach. Mm-hmm. Okay, I just watched the candy. And they got beat on special teams, and their morale may have deteriorated. Yeah, there was some turnovers, but I still got faith in the team. I think they got a good chance to pull some upsets in the Big Ten race. I think Michigan State better be on guard. They had the potential to do that. They're disgusted. They're embarrassed. I mean,
are you serious? So you think they have some upsets coming for Michigan? I mean, but looking at that offense, Apache. I mean, looking at that offense for me, again, I don't think Devin Gardner's your guy. At that QB position, Devin Gardner is totally overrated for me. I said it when he first got the starting job, and I'm gonna say it now. He is not quarterback savvy and does not have a high quarterback IQ. I don't think you're going to win with him, Apachu.
Whoa. I like him, man. Maybe because I'm in love with his athleticism. Because I've seen, like their stand. He had a hell of a game against Ohio State last year. That shows his potential. There's some other things going on, I think. What I did like also was that he passed to 8 different people instead of just passing to the big man. Because that's ridiculous if you got one player and you keep going to that receiver. You better expect to get intercepted, you know. Yeah, I think he's made some turnovers less than in the past. I just hope he's not a head case yet because he's been so banged up in the last couple of years. I just hope he can pull it together because I think right now, whether he's the man or not, they got no other choice. That young kid coming in, I think you said this last week, the most popular guy on the team is the quarterback sitting on the bench. You need to be careful of that.
Yeah.
You know, he can beat Minnesota. He can win a few games. If he can get his head back, I think they'll be all right, and I learned from listening to Earl over these years, you got to be in love with the game, okay? Otherwise, your season's over. Why watch it, you know?
Yeah.
And I want to make a comment about your cupcakes. Man, I totally agree with you. You remember the movie The Longest Yard?
Oh, I love that movie. Love it, Apache.
Oh, man, it's a beautiful movie. There's a lot of learning in there.
Yeah.
But Burt Reynolds tells the prison warden, you need a warm-up game, and that's when they played the prisoners. Remember, they played the inmates, the guard. They had a team and so forth. Every time, whether it's Michigan State, everybody else, they play these ridiculously terrible teams. It reminds me of that movie, and I get nothing from it. Every year, the first 2-3 games of all these great teams are pathetic blowouts, and I don't enjoy that. You know, yeah, we got beat by Utah, but I think I got more out of that than the blowout against some of the other teams. I like football. I'm in love with football. I'm in love with great athletes, and otherwise, most fans are going to be very, very sad at the end of the year. You guys have a higher standard now. You can't just win the Big Ten. You got to even go further. Right now you're worried about your rankings and so forth. And I mean, that goes with the territory, man. And every year, nobody's happy but the bowl winners. But anyway, I feel good about the Michigan team. They're learning. I think they're going to get better. And I like that argument on the sidelines. I saw some emotion there. I think you need to see that. If you look at the Utah team, the Simone coach, man, he was out of his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that energy was being transmitted to his players. I mean, he was into the game, man. He was doing somersaults, you know. I mean, he was red in the face, and you got to have that fire. You know, you can't be too good not to have emotions and so forth. I want to say one more thing.
Yeah, I
never liked the Michigan State coach until they played Michigan a couple years ago, and you had a defensive player who punched a Michigan player.
Yeah.
He was given a 15-yard penalty, okay? He punched the player, given – oh, yeah, it was the guy that went pro.
Will Golston. Yeah.
Okay, Golston, yeah. Okay, now, he punches this guy. They get Michigan State gets a 15-yard penalty. You know what the coach did? He left him in the game, okay? And that's all mental toughness. And Michigan State is tougher. Utah is tougher than Michigan. And Michigan needs to get physically tough, and they need to get nasty. And they're not nasty, man. You can't be pretty, just you got to get nasty. And I think that's what they're lacking. Maybe that's what they're getting. So I saw the argument is good. I know it goes against the grain of what everybody's saying. You know, but I think this team is going to get better as time goes on. Thanks a lot, guys. Great program.
Yay. Thank you, Apachu. Yeah, and, you know, I see the points that Apachu are making. I think, yeah, I agree. In order for Michigan to turn this thing around, I think they're not physical enough. I think they are lacking a certain incentive when they play out there. They seem too lackadaisical for me. And I honestly just don't see Gardner, you know, the leader, the QB. I'm not convinced that Gardner's a top-tier quarterback in college football. I just don't see it. I mean, he makes too many mental errors for me. He tries to force things way too much. I just don't see that aspect of it. And I think that the Michigan defense, they've shown spurts, especially at the beginning of this year, that, you know, they can make some things happen. But against true test, they always fold to me. I'm just not convinced, and I think this was the straw that broke the camel's back for Michigan's Brady Hoke. I think he's done. Tyler.
Just a quick stat for you. Brady Hoke at Michigan has never beaten a ranked team on the road, ever.
He's about to be fired. It's a wrap. Thank you for that stat, Tyler. Alex, any final thoughts before we hit the break?
All I got to say is that Apache's right. Derek Green, what a heck of a running back he is. And their defense is very good. But what I'm going to side with you here, Al, aside from Hoke not being done, but I'm going to side with you in the way that Devin Gardner completely holds Michigan back. Lack of accuracy, horrible IQ. They kind of have him in there because he's kind of that professional dual-type running back and kind of that typical mold of like a Terrell Pryor when he was there. They kind of see him as that nice dual-threat quarterback that can be dominant in the Big Ten, but he just doesn't have the tools to go along with it. He's more of a wide receiver, if anything, than a quarterback, and I think that's what's holding this team back this year. It's not their defense, surprisingly.
Yeah.
New coordinator's been doing a great—I mean, Greg Madison stayed for a reason, but it's the fact that their quarterback and Devin Gardner cannot lead this team whatsoever.
No, I think there's a lack of leadership for U of M. All right, folks, if you still want to call in and give your thoughts on anything that we talk about here on Current Sports, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll hit the break when we hear from Trevor Manuel. Trevor Manuel is a nationally ranked high school basketball player, one of the highest ranked basketball players in all of the state of Michigan. Oh, boy, you don't want to miss that interview. He'll be taking his talents to Lansing Everett next year. Don't touch that dial. Current Sports will be right back. I'm excited to have joining me one of the nation's top basketball prospects in the 2015 recruiting class after a year of playing at the famous Oak Hill Academy in Virginia, known for churning out basketball talent. He has returned to Lansing to play his senior year of basketball at Lansing Everett High School. Trevor Manuel and his father, Mr. Manuel, are joining me today. How you guys doing?
Doing good. Real good.
I'm excited you guys are here. How you doing, Mr. Manuel?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having us.
Definitely. Well, an exciting time for both of you, specifically Trevor, as now you have made your decision to go and play ball at Oregon after your senior year. First of all, Trevor, I want to go back in time for a second because last week I actually went out to Lansing Everett High School and Magic Johnson, the man, a legend. I put him on my Mount Rushmore of basketball players, okay? And you got a chance to meet Magic Johnson. Just talk about that moment. How was it meeting Magic last week?
I mean, I met him before, but always seeing him is a great feeling, just knowing that he knows me, because I think he's the best basketball player to ever play. Just to have that connection with him, that's a great feeling.
Really? You think Magic's the greatest of all time?
The greatest of all
time. What about Jordan?
Jordan was real good. I mean, but the Magic Johnson, that's the man right there.
Wow, that's pretty cool stuff. So were you kind of starstruck meeting him?
I mean, the first time I ever met him, I really was starstruck, just knowing that I got to meet Magic Johnson. But now every time I just see him, it's just a great feeling. I get butterflies in my chest every time I see him.
Wow, that's unbelievable. All right, you know something, Trevor, that was really alarming to me? When I was out there talking with a few of the kids, and it was really alarming because I was talking to a few of the kids in high school, and a lot of them didn't even know who Magic Johnson was. I could not believe it. Is that kind of an overall feeling that, you know, kids are kind of out of touch with the history of basketball when they talk about Magic Johnson at all, Trevor?
I mean, yeah, that's really bad, not knowing that he came from that school, one of the best players of all time, came from that school, you don't know who that is. It's bad.
Oh, boy, well, I tell you, he's certainly an idol to many, including yourself. All right, well, let's shift gears really quick. Now, you played your junior year at Oak Hill Academy in Virginia, a school known for churning out some of the greatest basketball talent in the nation. Trevor, how was your junior year playing at Oak Hill, and what did you learn?
I think I had a really good year. I mean, I got to play with the best players every day in practice. The Martin twins going to North Carolina State, Shelton Mitchell going to Vanderbilt, and BJ Stiff going to UVA. I mean, it was just a great feeling playing with those guys every day in practice and just getting better as a team. And then we got to go out there and play the best competition in the country, like Jahlil Okafor going to Duke. He was the number one player in the country. You got to play him. And just everybody else we played a really tough schedule, and we had a really productive year.
Now, going from Lansing Sexton High School to Oak Hill, I mean, was there a big differential in talent? Did it kind of hit you all of a sudden? Or, I mean, was it kind of just like high school basketball playing at Lansing Sexton? Was there a difference at all? Did you notice a difference?
I mean, there was a difference playing the games, but, like, I played AAU against the top players in the country, too, so I was kind of already used to the competition level. But just going from Sexton to Oak Hill, there's a big difference because we didn't have that practice every day, like the competition every day in practice that we had at Oak Hill. We didn't have that at Sexton.
Nice. All right. Now, your dad is sitting here next to you, James Lee Manuel Jr. Now, you know, James, seeing your son Trevor, you know, over these, just over his time growing up, really, you know, just kind of his basketball path, he's gotten better year by year by year. I mean, wouldn't you know that Trevor was pretty good at the game?
Recently.
Recently, huh?
Yeah, recently. You know, he always loved the game, but now he's really starting to understand the game. You know, and now it's becoming fun to watch him play. You know, when they're in junior high school, you know, that's when he really started playing because he played other sports. He wrestled and played football, so he really started playing basketball around 7th, 8th grade and then started taking it serious when he got to the high school level or 8th grade level.
So when did it hit you that, man, my son's pretty good at this thing?
9th grade when he had that dunk that Izzo just jumped out of his seat in. And right then and there, I was like, okay, he knew how to shock the crowd.
Really? So describe that moment. Who were they playing, and when did that happen? You said his freshman year this happened?
Yeah, it was a freshman year. I believe he was playing against East Lansing. And one of his teammates shot the shot at, you know, at the, like 3 or 4 seconds left at the buzzer, and Trevor just went above the rim, slammed with two hands. I just seen Izzo come out of his seat. I'm like, okay.
Now that you got Izzo out of his seat, right. That's saying a lot, right?
That's saying a whole lot right there, because it doesn't take that much to get him out of his seat. I mean, it takes a lot to get him out of his seat. So,
ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with one of the nation's top basketball prospects in the 2015 recruiting class, Trevor Manuel, alongside his dad, James Lee Manuel Jr. All right, well, when you heard, I got to bring up this because, of course, Trevor, you played at Lansing Sexton for a little bit. When you heard that Carlton Valentine, a dear friend of Current Sports who, you know, has been a famed coach in the year for a long time, who decided to take a year off. He took a year off just so he could see his sons, Denzel and Drew, over at Michigan State play, and also Drew, a fantastic assistant manager there for Tom Izzo's squad. He took a year off and decided to return and coach over at Lansing Sexton. When you heard that Carlton was going to return, I know you were debating on which school you would take your talents to between Everett, Sexton, and I don't know, maybe among others. Did it kind of delay your decision when you heard that Carlton was going to come back?
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, we had to go by the district in which we live in, and Everett was the one we lived in. So, I mean, I really had to go there if I didn't want to sit out half of the season. But I was kind of thinking about doing that, going over to Sexton, because Coach Valentine, he's always been like a dad to me. And I would have loved to went back over there and play with him. But I just wanted to play the whole season, so I had to go to Everett.
Did you have any conversations with him about, you know, what you should do and about what you would do?
I mean, he told me whatever I do, he's going to be there to support me 100%. So, I mean, it really didn't make a difference. It's not, I'm still going to have his support no matter where I go.
What have you learned from Carlton that has really stuck with you throughout your basketball career?
I mean, he just told me to play 100%, make sure I don't take any plays off. He's been telling me this since I was a freshman. And every time I sit there, just stand for a second, I think of him and make sure I'm being productive in the game.
Now, I'm sure, you know, when you made your decision to go and play for Lansing Everett, I mean, another one of the big selling points happened to be that you have cousins that actually attend Everett, right?
Yes, sir.
They both play basketball?
All three of them. I have
three of them?
Yep, Diego Robinson. He's a sophomore this year. And the Hudson twins, the seniors, they're all my cousins.
So when you were debating about it, I mean, what were they telling you?
I mean, I wasn't really hearing nothing much from them. They said it'd be nice to come over here and try to win it as a family. So, that's really sold me right there.
Is that pretty exciting that you're going to be playing with your cousins?
Yes, very.
So what's the goals for this team? State championship?
Yes.
That's the goal?
That's the goal.
You have voiced that. Desmond Ferguson. Have you been talking to Desmond Ferguson throughout this process as well? I'm sure that was a big thing in this whole thing, too.
I mean, yeah, he told me that basically we're going to have a good team this year. And that I'll be one of the leaders on the team. So, I mean, I just wanted to go over there and help my family out.
Now, I think there's another incentive that's, of course, sitting in this room with James Lee Manuel Jr., your father. If I am correct here, your father also played at Everett with the 1983 McDonald's All-American, Kevin Smith. Am I right?
Yes, sir.
When you told your dad that you're going to Everett, there's got to be a certain legacy that also added to that incentive as well. Talk a little bit about that, both of you.
I mean, he was pretty excited when I told him that I was going to Everett because, that's where he went. But knowing we always collide and bump heads when we talk about who had the best team, I'm always going to say my freshman year we had the best team. He always brings up his. But, I mean, it's nothing to argue about anymore.
James, can you talk about your high school career and your career at Everett? I mean, how far did you guys get? Did you guys win a state title?
No, we lost in the, I believe it was semifinals, right before the semifinals. We lost to Antoine Joubert, Detroit Southwestern. I mean, it's a game we definitely should have won.
Right.
But, I mean, that was a super team we had. I mean, we had Steve Haney, who was definitely one of the top college players in the country, and Kevin Smith. I mean, we were very big. We had Scott Reed, who was high jumping, 7'1".
Wow.
I mean, yeah, I mean, he had, you know, we had some fabulous players. I mean, everybody could dunk except for the little white dude.
Right. Steve Haney. There you go.
But we loved him anyway because we love he can shoot. So if we was in a slump, all we had to do was give him the ball and he'd get us out of it. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was great playing with that team. And, you know, we even had arguments when I was playing over in Europe. Magic and I were sitting down at, you know, eating dinner and stuff, and we were talking about who had the best team. And we argued for about a couple of hours who had the best team.
So you and Magic debate about that all the time.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah, because he was like, who's going to guard me? I'm like, well, who's going to guard me? You got to guard Kevin, so who's going to guard me? So
exactly.
So we had that conversation and, you know, kind of had the same conversation with Trevor and, you know, how he's going to match up with Denzel and Anthony Clemens and, you know, how he's going to match up against us. So
James, are you pretty close to Magic as well?
Yes. Yeah, I've been knowing Magic since I've been like 6 or 7 years old. My mom used to babysit him. My dad used to work at Everett. I used to, you know, when I was a little kid in elementary school, I used to go up there with my dad and hang out, and Irvin was in one of his classes. You know, my dad used to make me eat these egg salad sandwiches every day.
All right, sounds good.
You know, and Irvin got tired of seeing me eating them, so one day he just grabbed me and took me to McDonald's and got me a Burger King, got me a Big Mac from McDonald's. I remember that for the rest of my life. I mean,
wow.
You don't have to do anything else.
He just bought that Big Mac. That's what matters,
that
right?
That Big Mac, that's all that matters. Instead of egg salad, I had a Big Mac that day. So
oh, boy. Get... That's crazy stuff. Now, did you see Magic at all when he made his return that last week?
No, I didn't get a chance to see him.
Gotcha.
It was all, you know, he was at the school, so it was perfect. It was perfect for Trevor to, you know, for them two to run into each other. And actually, Trevor don't remember when he was like 6 or 7 years old, him and Magic played a game of one-on-one out here on campus.
Is that so? Who won? Said,
oh, of course, Magic.
Okay, Magic. He's the Magic Man,
he's the
right?
He's Magic Man. Nobody can beat Magic.
Oh, boy. Now, James, looking at Trevor now, sort of walking your footsteps, you know, taking his talents now to Lansing Everett. I mean, how cool is that? I mean, as a father, looking at your son sort of come up the ranks now, I mean, he's one of the most highly touted, you know, nationally ranked basketball prospects for the upcoming class of 2015. I mean, you got to be pretty proud, right?
I mean, the best thing I'm proud of is he's a good kid. You know, for one, he's a humble kid. You know, he's not braggadocious or anything like that. He's really humble. He works hard. He got a dad like me that pushes him every day. You know, we bump heads a lot.
You guys do?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we play one-on-one. I mean, we even get on the PlayStation sometime and get my butt kicked on that. But with, with the shooting contest, I win most of those.
You do?
Yeah, I win most of those.
So you guys are pretty competitive. This must be a pretty competitive household. That's kind of fueled you, right, Trevor?
Yeah. I mean, he's like my dad, my brother, my best friend. He's my everything. I mean, we have fun with each other, though. Stay competitive, and we just have fun with it.
That reminds me and my dad. I mean, growing up, I mean, I always say I'm a very competitive guy. If I'm playing my grandma in Goldfish, I'm not just trying to beat grandma. I'm trying to really beat grandma, right. Okay? Who wins the most out of you two?
One-on-one, I can't beat him. I can't even play. He won't even let me get a shot off.
Really?
Really.
So he's surpassed you in that now.
He's definitely
passed. When was the first time he beat you in one-on-one, James?
It was ninth grade.
Eighth grade.
Eighth grade it was. He knows the exact moment and date, I'm sure. But on the PlayStation, he may have that upper hand on the PlayStation.
I think I let him win that day in eighth grade. But I'm real proud of him. He works hard, and you know, it's every dad's dream for his son to be able to go to a nice college and get a good education. He worked hard for it. I mean, a lot of people say, you know, you've been a good dad and helping Trevor, but Trevor did it all himself.
Great stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, again, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with one of the nation's top basketball prospects in the 2015 recruiting class, Trevor Manuel, along with his outstanding father, James Lee Manuel Jr. So now I want to shift gears now and talk about the recruiting process. Now, Trevor, not too long ago, you came out and stated that you will be taking your talents after high school to Oregon University. Yes, the O, the Ducks. How did that process go? What was the selling point in becoming a member of Oregon?
I mean, I went out there to my official visit, wide open, recruiting. I still had, I think, 8 or 9 other schools on my list thinking about. And then I just went out there, and I had a great time. I felt like I was actually at home. And the players, we all hit it off real well. Me and the coaches have a great relationship. And then it was just a great feeling. I was like, I know this is where I want to be.
Now, I've seen pictures. I've Googled a lot, and I've seen pictures of the outstanding athletic facilities they have there. I mean, something that stands out to me, something I just can't get out of my mind is the weight room. They have Brazilian oak wood floors. Yes. In the weight room. Yes. I'm sitting there like, you got to be kidding me. Of course, Oregon is also the home of Phil Knight, right. The founder of Nike. I mean, your eyes had to be popping out of your head for both of you when you went out there for that visit, right?
Yes. I mean, they showed us all the gear that they got and all the gear they're going to get. I mean, it was just like I was in the dream. I mean, I'm a gearhead. That's all I like. I love gear. So just seeing all that stuff that they gotten, it was amazing. I was like, wow. I was basically drooling the whole time.
What were your thoughts, James, when you saw these facilities?
Oh, I mean, I wish I can go back in time and start all over. I mean, I'm serious. Right. I mean, just the training facilities, the athletic trainers. They got one of the kids from OKC. His dad is the head trainer over there. His son is now at Oregon, you know, getting all the tricks and trades from his dad.
Wow.
Kevin Durant is definitely his favorite player, so he's getting Kevin Durant workouts and all that stuff. So it's the bomb.
It's the bomb. It's the bomb. Coming from James Lee Manuel Jr. Gotta love that. That's a great quote there. Now, you know, looking at Oregon's facility. So it's safe to say, you know, because recruiting, it seems to me recruiting, and Alex knows that I hate recruiting. I hate recruiting only because I feel as though there's too much put into it. I mean, a kid can say he's going to this school one day, and the next day he can totally change his mind. Yes. You just don't know what goes through the minds of kids sometimes. I believe it's become a little too political at times,
right.
But there's so many factors that weigh in to a decision in going to a school. Mm-hmm. For both of you, I mean, how hectic was this process? And are you kind of relieved that you've made your decision now, Trevor, to sort of put this baby to bed?
I mean, yeah, it was very tiring and it was a lot of pressure going on throughout the time since like eighth grade when I first started getting recruited. But then now that I got committed and I got everything out the way, I mean, I could just focus on having fun my senior year.
Was it stressful at all for you?
I mean, it was very stressful just knowing that all these coaches were not like really bugging me, but they were staying on me to make me just want something maybe that I didn't want. Like from a school I might not have thought about, they were always like just constantly in contact with me.
So did you feel too pressured at some time?
It was very pressuring.
What about for you? As being the father in this whole thing, I mean, what was going through your head throughout this entire process?
I was a little disappointed that his number got leaked out like that. I mean, because, you know, the phone calls were ridiculous. I mean, every 10 minutes we were getting a call from, you know, a different school or something like that.
Wow.
That could be kind of troublesome, you know, being, you know, all those calls from, you know, from adults calling kids like that.
Yeah.
You got to monitor those things because you never know what they're saying to your child.
Exactly.
So, I mean, so that was the only really bad part, knowing that your son is out there and everybody wants him. That's a great feeling.
All right, again, that was Trevor Manuel and his father, James, talking about the recruiting process, his decision to take his talents to Oregon, and so much more. We'll play part two of that interview during tomorrow's Current Sports Show. Pretty crazy. His phone number got leaked, and all these recruits just blowing up his phone at his house. I mean, that's unbelievable stuff. But, you know, to close out our show, it's Monday, and each and every Monday we like to recap the weekend and give you our weekend winners here on Current Sports. You know what? Mine comes from a pretty special kid during a pretty special interview.
All right, well, at first we started slow. We started real slow. And, you know, that's all right. That's okay, because sometimes in life you're going to start slow. That's okay. We told ourselves, hey, we're going to start slow. We're going to keep going fast. We're going to start slow, but we're always, always going to finish fast. No matter what the score was, we're going to finish hard. We're going to finish fast. Yeah, they had us the first half. I'm not going to lie. They had us. We weren't defeated, but they had us. But it took guts. It took an attitude. That's all it takes. That's all it takes to be successful is an attitude. And that's what our coach told us. He said, hey, it's going to be tough. It's going to be hard. You're going to go out there. You're going to battle. You're going to fight. You're going to do it for one. You're going to do it for one another. Do it for each other. You're going to do it for yourself. You're going to do it for us. And you're going to go out with this win. And we believe that. We truly did. And it's an awesome feeling. It's an awesome feeling when you truly believe that you're going to be successful. Regardless of the situation, regardless of the scoreboard, you're going to be successful because you put in all the time, all the effort, all the hard work, and you know that it's going to pay off. And if it doesn't pay off, you continue to give God the glory. If you still lose the game, you continue to get each other's back. And that's what we realized. Win or lose, we realized that we were going to be all right. It was going to be okay. We're gonna keep smiling. It was awesome. Awesome. Yes, ma'am. Hey, you can do anything you put your mind to. Never give up on your dreams. Keep smiling no matter what you're going through. If you fall down, just get up. If you can't get up, your friends are there to help you up. Your mom is there. Your daddy's there. God's there. Hey, I'm there to help you up. You're there. It's going to be all right. Just keep smiling, man.
How can you not help but have a smile on your face and laugh at that one? That's great stuff. Again, folks, that's from Apollos Hester. He's a wide receiver at Eastview High School in Georgetown, Texas. Listed at 6 feet, 190 pounds. He runs a 4.5 40-yard dash. The kid is pretty good. Hopefully, you know, he has an outstanding football career, as he moves on. I tell you what, though, I heard that interview. That was a post-game interview after his win on Friday with his high school team. And, man, it was one for the books, folks. He's so positive, so uplifting. Listen to that interview. I mean, it's gone viral everywhere. How can Apollos Hester not be one of your weekend winners, folks? That's mine. We'll wrap it up by giving yours. Here's Tyler and Jock. Jock, first. Tyler, you want to go first and give your weekend winner?
I'm going to go with the group. I'm going to go with the walk-ons at Michigan State University. A.J. Troop, wide receiver, had a second touchdown catch. John Jakubik had a nice block to spring Delton Williams for his 80-yard touchdown run. And a couple walk-on quarterbacks got in there to take some snaps.
Those are really good choices right there. Jock?
Well, I was going to go with A.J. Troop myself, but another weekend winner I have is Le'Veon Bell, who led the Steelers to a big win over Carolina on the road, 37-19, and he rushed for 147 yards. He's got 315 on the year after three games.
Yeah, Le'Veon Bell was good, right? He got me 21 points in my fantasy league as well. Shout out to Le'Veon. Alex, who's your weekend winner?
Yeah, one Spartan typically forgotten about, especially quarterback. I mean, Hoyer has his job in Cleveland. Cousins the default because of Griffin. But Drew Stanton, it just seems like he couldn't get the right place to start at. Coming back for a second game, triumphant game, coming back and showing that he has a place in the league. Obviously, with the Lions, it didn't work out. He kind of bounced around for years, but it's showing that, you know, he really is trying to make a statement in Arizona.
Yeah, well, there you have that, folks. Good choices. Good choices for weekend winners, folks. Again, folks, we are wrapping up today's show. But, hey, if you still want to weigh in on anything we've talked about today, you know that you can weigh in on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. You can also tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet us at WKAR_sports. So there's three avenues. If you want to list a comment there or tweet me back, I will read your comment live on the Tuesday edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin. I want to thank you, all of you out there, for tuning in to listen to today's show. Tyler Beck, Jock DeWitt, thanks a lot, guys. You guys are naturals on the air, right? Good stuff. Good stuff. Alex Shar, the man behind the glass is what I call him. Thanks for engineering today's show. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and 90.5 WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic start to your week. And as always, be easy, people.